Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. My co-host, Dr. Les Olah, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College, is away on a ministry venture, and I know that you who listen to us regularly will want to be praying for him, and we thank the Lord for the opportunities he has to minister away. But in his place today, we have the privilege of having a conversation with two men who are not strangers to you, the listening audience. They have been with us on numbers of occasions in the past. I'm speaking of evangelist Kevin Brownfield, who is also the director of Extension Ministries at Northern Baptist Bible College. And Kevin, I think you also work at a local church in the area, don't you?
That is correct, up at Grace Baptist Church in Kingsford, Michigan, where our other co-host is the senior pastor.
And I was just going there. Dr. Wynn Kimbrough, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You are one of the favorites that our listeners like to hear when Dr. O can't be here. And we're thankful for your ministry. You are the senior pastor at Grace Baptist Church in Kingsford, Michigan. And you've been there how many years?
15 years. This is our 15th year there. Started out as a church plant up there, and the Lord has blessed us. We're thankful for the opportunity to be there and excited for the privilege to be together today and hopefully for a few sessions together, and look forward to our topic.
Well, guys, we have a topic today. We've got our Bibles and a cup of coffee around the table here, and we want to talk about one of our favorite topics, and that is the gospel. Kevin, I know you've given a great deal of thought to this. In fact, you were talking before the program about a message that God has been kind of burning into your heart about the gospel, and I thought it'd be great for you to share that maybe with our listening audience this morning.
Well, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, which the book of Thessalonica is such a powerful book because the Apostle Paul goes there. It's a place where the gospel wasn't. 3 weeks he preaches the gospel there, and there is a riot that takes place. But in the midst of this, there is what we would call a great awakening. And there are many of these Thessalonican people who turn from their idols to serve the living God, as the last verse says. And, you know, my whole synopsis of that chapter as I began to study it several years ago was, this is the power of the gospel being fleshed out. The gospel is so powerful that it can change everything. I see in chapter 1, verse 3, that it changes the inner man. You see those core attitudes that are there.
The work of faith, labor of love,
patience of hope. Those internal things that it changes. There's a fundamental radical change that happens inside when the gospel takes root. But then you see not only does it change the inner man, it changes the outer man. Paul begins to talk about how they become examples to everyone around that believes. And then lastly, it changes the end of man. It changes everything. And really today, there's almost a fear that seems to be prevalent in American Christianity because we've kind of become turned inward because we're afraid that the gospel doesn't impact this postmodern world.
I agree with that, and I do think that the question often is in the minds of people, whether they ask it or not, is the gospel really that powerful to affect and impact and change people's lives like it happened as we read in the New Testament? Was that something that happened then but doesn't happen now? And what do you observe in the church today as it relates to evangelism, outreach, and the power of the gospel to change lives?
Let me ask you this question. Do you think that people today have a question about the power of the gospel, or do they have a question about what makes the gospel powerful? In other words, is their question, does the gospel work? Or is their question, what is it that we need to figure out makes the gospel work?
Probably there's something to both of those. Mm-hmm. I think our tendency is to try to make a program accomplish what only God can do. And we have plenty of programs available to us. And seemingly there is a lot of outreach. And again, I am still asking the question, are all of those really the power of the gospel, or is there a lot of man-centered emphasis whenever we are doing some of those things?
It seems to me that there was an era in the recent history of this where guys, and Kevin and I and you would have been maybe at the back end of this generation, where we kind of showed up and somebody taught us how to load the gospel gun and shoot it, and we just went out and did that. and God used the gospel and people got saved. I mean, you know, I can remember the whole emphasis on just going out and, brother, just go out there and don't worry about getting it right. Just get it out and Jesus will save them. And there were from that era people who legitimately did come to Christ. But there was kind of like this movement of just get them to pray the prayer. Evolved into a numbers thing where big evangelism, just go out and knock on the door and get them to pray the prayer. And if you lead 100 to Christ, two will stick. And two's better than none, so keep the ball rolling. Then there was a reaction against that to what became sort of an easy believism to bring him to church and let the expert do it. So that evolved into then, well, what will get him to church? Well, we'll darken the auditorium. We'll kind of let him be anonymous and make him feel comfortable, the seeker model, or we'll entertain him. We'll kind of get him here, which is the contemporary model, et cetera. But what ended up happening was lay people stopped doing it for the most part and left it to the expert. And the experts then began to try to figure out, well, what do we need to do to get him here so that they can hear? And then what's the best way for them to hear it when they get here? And what should they hear when they get here? And now we're on kind of a swing away from that to where people are actually going, well, I don't want anything to do with that kind of evangelism. So now we're almost making it so hard for people to come to Christ that, boy, we're throwing a whole lot of stuff in that you've got to witness to this person for 6 months. They've got to have sorrow and tears and repentance, and they got to know every one of the Ten Commandments, and they got to listen to all of the Ten Commandments that they've broken before they can be saved. And, you know, when I go through the New Testament and see how Paul did it, he never started with the Ten Commandments. And all of it's been good. I mean, you start with the evangelism that you and I were exposed to as kids, and that was motivated by, you know, there's a lot of people lost. We got to get out there and reach them. We got to quit talking about it and go doing it. I can remember definitions of evangelism like this. It's one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread, and there's some truth to that. That was a great motivation, but it led down a path. Then we have the seeker-sensitive or the contemporary church model that basically has watered down key components of the gospel that make it offensive. And so over the last 30 years, we're looking at a church full of people that have supposedly been converted by the gospel whose life has no evidence of conversion. And so godly people are looking at that, and they instinctively know that that's not right, that something is wrong. They may not know the theological terms. They just know when they show up to church, and the church is full of people who are no different than the people that they know are lost on Monday, that somehow the gospel that is being presented in that form, there's something amiss. Again, out of good motive, out of a very good motive. We want genuine conversions. We want disciples, not decisions. And I've said those things in our church. But at the same time, I think we can actually make the gospel harder than Jesus made it. He said, suffer the little, what? Children to come unto me. So I guess my question is, you look at that scenario, what do you see in terms of that picture, and how would you kind of bring the church back to balance?
Kevin, since you started on this topic, what was it like in Thessalonica? And what did Paul do as it relates to the gospel that was so powerful? I think that answers a lot of this.
I think another ingredient that plays into this is that there is a mediocrity about us today. We have the gospel as a part of our lives, but our lives are not the gospel. We are not totally immersed and consumed with the one passion that Christ had of reaching and saving sinners who were lost, and Paul had. There's a fundamental difference, I think, often about the way we approach things today and the way maybe that they approach them. For Paul, the gospel was not a nice little convenient thing that he had as a part of his life. Everything about his life was consumed with the gospel message and giving out that gospel message at any cost.
Yeah, I would say it this way. That our life isn't the message, that there is a message that Paul carried, but that message impacted his life and it was shaped by the message that he carried.
And that's exactly the point that I want to make, is that we kind of have this mediocrity about Christianity. In other words, we're consumed with a lot of other things and the gospel is in there with them.
Because what's happening today, you know, to put another car on the train with the emergent and emerging conversations that are going on, is that the gospel is now being carried really in your life, and your life is almost inseparably bound up as part of the message.
Mm.
So you have the whole incarnational talk going on today that started about 15 years ago.
Right.
We want to incarnate the gospel. Well, we're not Jesus. Jesus is the only incarnational form of God there is. Yes. We are Christ followers. We are Christians, little Christs, but we aren't Christ. And we do carry a message that isn't our own, and our life is immersed in that message to the degree that the message shapes us.
Exactly.
But our life isn't the message. Somebody can't just look at our life and on that basis alone come to God. They need the word married perhaps to that life.
Exactly.
And I think when Paul went to Thessalonica or wherever he went, we go back to a familiar verse. And what did Paul say? For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And so whenever he went with that message, which was visible in his life and which he was willing to die for, every bit of it was for me to live is Christ.
And to follow up, Wynn, that's exactly, Kevin, what you were talking about in 1 Thessalonians 1:5. For our gospel did not come to you in word only, but also in power and in the Holy Spirit and with much conviction, or with full conviction or assurance. Just as you know what kind of men we prove to be among you for your sake. So there's the life shaped by the message, but the life wasn't the message.
Right.
I brought the gospel, and it came in power, and its power was attached to the Spirit of God, and it brought much full assurance in you, and our lives were not a hindrance to that. I think that's probably where the gospel approaches today are missing. They're missing either on the content side, or they're missing on the life side. The person carrying, I mean, if the only person sharing the gospel is the pastor, and he's sharing it in a room full of people who are supposed to be Christians and their life has not been at all impacted by it, then that gospel has no credibility to a lost person watching.
Yes.
And yet, if the only thing they see is this life that has been transformed, and there's never any declaration of the offensive part of the gospel, which is, you are a sinner, Jesus Christ's blood was shed for you, there is nothing you can contribute to it by your baptism, by your church membership, by your good works, and Jesus is the only way to heaven. It is exclusive. This is where the emerging church is going to just take a hit consistently, because the pluralism, and I'm being very, very broad brushed here, just undermines the very thing we're talking about. Well, gentlemen, we're going to continue this in our next broadcast because we're all the way out of time on this one. Thank you for joining us today on the Word for Life broadcast. Make sure to catch today's broadcast on our website, www.thewordforlife.org. Until the next time we're together, may the Lord bless.